Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Atlantic and Coastal, The Athletic's ACC podcast. I'm Andy Bitter, your Virginia Tech football writer. Had a busy week here. Also, your Atlantic and Coastal podcast host. Well, we have one of our ACC title game participants. Pitt sealed the deal in the Coastal Division last week, beating UVA. This will be the Panthers' first ACC championship game appearance since 2018. There will be no Coastal chaos this year, as much as we all tried to speak it into existence every single week. But you look at the Atlantic Division, we go into the last week here. Everything is Atlantic anarchy, we like to say, on that side. Three teams are still alive on that side of the conference after Clemson crushed Wake Forest over the weekend. Here's the scenario. Wake Forest, if it beats Boston College on the road this week, it wins the division. NC State, it takes the division. If it beats UNC and Wake Forest loses, then the Wolfpack are the champions. Clemson can still win the division again. This is like Michael Myers. They're not dead. They are still alive if both Wake Forest and NC State lose. It's a very interesting scenario going into this last weekend. And to talk about it, we go to somebody smack dab in the middle of it. Grace Rayner, our Clemson writer for The Athletic, nice enough to wake up early on this Tuesday morning to do this podcast with us. Grace, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, friend. I'm excited to be here. And yeah, I mean, right when we think that the Coastal's going to let us down, the Atlantic picks it right back up.
Well, this is the Clemson team we've all been waiting for. They finally showed up, beat Wake Forest 48-27. Kobe Pace, Will Shipley ran for 303 yards, four touchdowns in that game. Shipley also threw a touchdown on a jump pass that Tim Tebow would have been proud of. Clemson defense was sharp. They held Wake to 36 yards rushing, three turnovers, seven sacks. I mean, this is a Wake offense that was averaging 44.7 points coming in. They had 13 points through three quarters. Just sort of a vintage Clemson performance defensively. They completely shut down this high-powered offense. They found something offensively. What was your biggest takeaway from this? What was most impressive about Clemson?
Yeah, I think that going into it, we've had no reason all season to doubt Brent Venables and that side of the ball. And if you look at Brent Venables versus Wake Forest, he's had their number for pretty much as long as he's been here. And so I figured that Clemson's defense would do its part even against a really, really good offense that, as you said, came in averaging almost 45 points a game. But I felt like Clemson's offense had to score. Like, I did not feel like it was going to be one of those games where the defense could just solely pull them through this time. And so, you know, look, Clemson coaches and players have been saying literally all season, we're right there, we're not far, we're not making these mistakes in practice. And it was really difficult to believe that, because what we saw on Saturdays did not suggest that this offense was close. And then Saturday, they finally did it, and they put it together, and I thought DJ played his best game. I thought Shipley and Pace were tremendous. Pace especially going for almost 200 yards. The offensive line, especially along the interior, was better. And it was just one of those days that for the first time, all 11 players got on the same page. And that's been kind of rare for Clemson's offense this year.
That's always what you hear from coaches, is we're close. No, you have to trust us. We're close. I mean, Virginia Tech was saying that the other way. I'm like, close to what? Close to bowl eligibility? You're not close to anything right now. 543 yards of offense, 333 on the ground. This offense is fixed, right? That's a fixed. Just, it's all fixed. Everything is all right, right?
It's not broken anymore.
How do you look at this thing, though? I mean, they say we're close. They have this game like this. Wake Forest, not exactly a top-notch defense. I mean, even in its loss against North Carolina, high-scoring game, even in its win against NC State the previous week, high-scoring game. This is just how Wake plays, really high-scoring game. So do we look at this and go, hey, everything's on the up and up with Clemson, or are there still concerns about this offense?
I think there are still concerns, and I think when you have the nation's number 96 offense going into the last game of the regular season, there has to be concerns. But I do think that this, like, Clemson's offense really all season had not had their just this moment of breakthrough where I talked about this earlier this week with our good pal Wes Durham at the ACC Network. Like, Clemson's been cracking the door on all of these wins that they've won by 6 and 7 points. They had not slammed the door on a legitimate opponent this season until Saturday. So I think that Clemson going into the South Carolina game, the offense is certainly going to enter with much more confidence, and I think that they will click, and I think we'll see a better output than we've seen throughout the course of the season, but I don't think it's necessarily fixed. But I don't know. Can Clemson beat South Carolina and win a bowl game with the offense they played with on Saturday? Absolutely.
DJ Uiagalelei. He was 11 of 19 for 208 yards, touchdown and an interception. I looked at the ESPN.com QBR metric. I don't know how much I trust this, but 42.6, which is still below average. Average is 50. That's the scale they use. Then I look at the receivers that he had in that game, and they're missing Justin Ross, Joseph Nada, Frank Lansden, E.J. Williams. They're all out in this game. How do you rate his performance? I mean, it's not like he overwhelmed Wake Forest with his passing, but he also didn't have any receivers. There were any of their top receivers, it seemed like, in this game.
Yeah, I thought this was DJ's best game for a couple of reasons. The first being that he made a play on 3rd and 8 where he avoided 2 sacks. He spun out of one and slipped out of the other one and threw off balance on the move 52 yards downfield to Bo Collins. And I thought it was the best play definitely of his season, possibly of his career. And I thought from then on that gave him some confidence the rest of the afternoon. And he and Bo have this connection from high school, and they linked up again on another 3rd and 8, and it was for a 58-yard touchdown. And I think, like, those are some of the throws that we just haven't – it seems like when DJ's not thinking as much and he just has to make a play, he's a lot more effective because we've just seen him overthrow receivers so often this year. And so the fact that he had those big plays to a receiver that he was comfortable with, I think made him really confident. I thought it was his best game. Was there still a lot out there? Absolutely. The receiver situation is a complicated one. Dabo was joking about it, but like Clemson started Will Sweeney in the slot on Saturday because they had so few bodies. And so I think that's part of it too, but I'm definitely rambling at this point, but like DJ's also, I guess my point is that like he's also overthrown like his healthy receivers. He has struggled when he has had Ross and Gata and Latson, but a good day for him to kind of finally figure it out.
Yeah, I think that early pass, he was just sort of playing ball at that point. He wasn't like in a system and like I have to make this read and go over here. It's like
right.
He got pressured, got away from it, and he just chucked it down the field, and it was the, you know, as you said, the best play that he's had perhaps this season. Kind of give some hope to Clemson that maybe he turns this around next year. I don't necessarily know what direction they'll go with the quarterback. They always are recruiting a ton of talent, so there's always somebody coming in that could challenge for this spot. But maybe give some hope that this guy could be the player that everybody hopes that he could be. I'm curious about this. What do we make of this Clemson season? This is a team that is 8-3 right now, I believe. Say they win at South Carolina. And they're favored in that game by 11. And they get to 9-3, but they don't win the Atlantic Division. It ends a 6-year run as the ACC champions if they don't do that. They still have a chance to win 10 games this year. I've been sort of harping on Clemson all year and profiting off them earlier this year when they kept being like 16 or 17-point favorites. I'm like, I don't think this offense is going to do that. But they've still been competitive. This defense is still really good. This is not quite the dumpster fire disaster that this has been made out to be. I mean, it's not a national championship quality team this year, but if you get to 10 wins, that's still a pretty good season, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Clemson is, if they get to 10 wins, it'll be their 11th consecutive season with 10 wins. And I think that when you look at, when you zoom out and you look at the larger landscape of this Clemson season, number one, I think it puts into perspective just how dominant Clemson has been in these last 6 years. Like this is a team that, as you said, could finish the regular season 9-3. And in September, for Clemson fans, the sky was absolutely falling when they were 2-2 and they lost to Georgia and NC State. So I think that that's part of it, is you, you, of course, we all know how dominant Clemson's been, but you really are reminded of it when you see them struggle. And then secondly, when I look at this Clemson season, and Dave Clawson had said this last week, he had said that he thought this was one of Dabo Swinney's best coaching jobs. And I agree with him. I think that when you look at the fact that Clemson has lost probably at least 17 guys are out for the year. There's been over 20 who have missed significant time. They've had four hit the portal. When you just look at the number of players that they've been without, and you look at the way that DJ has struggled, the way the offensive line has struggled, and this team still might win 10 games. I mean, I think that that's a credit to the job that Dabo has done, and he's said many times that he's had to teach in this year in a way that he hasn't in a long time, all the way back to 2014. I mean, if you're a Clemson fan, you're probably, you know, bummed they're not going to the playoff, but I think that I do think that the turnaround for them the last six games or so has been pretty remarkable.
What do we make of this game this week? Clemson, an 11-point favorite at South Carolina. Dabo versus Shane Beamer. These are two players, coaches, entertaining guys. I know Shane pretty well. I've been following him. You know, honestly, probably should get some SEC Coach of the Year love a little bit for getting that South Carolina team to a bowl game this season. I saw him dancing in the locker room afterwards, very reminiscent of his dad dancing in the locker room. I think he learned a lot of his moves from him, and they're not exceptional dance moves. They're very football coach dance moves out there. Is there any dislike between this two? Are they pretty friendly to each other at this point, at this stage in the rivalry?
Super friendly, yeah. I mean, Dabo has had nothing but just glowing things to say about Shane Beamer from the day he was hired all the way up until yesterday, when he, you know, obviously started talking about South Carolina for this week. But I think they're very, like you said, they're very similarly wired. I think that their players love them in a very similar way. And Dabo had said too that he probably deserves some SEC Coach of the Year recognition, or at least being in the conversation. He said that this has been a remarkable job that Shane has done. You can tell that these guys really like each other.
Is that all going to go away once they get on the field? I mean, these teams have like brawled before
they
in
have,
a game.
Yes.
I mean, this is no love lost in this rivalry here. Does this have the potential to? Could this be a close game, I guess? I mean, I know Clemson has not been hitting on all cylinders. I just wonder if South Carolina has the horses to stay in this one.
I think it could be a close game. I mean, I'm at the point now where however many games we are, 11 games in the regular season, like, I just show up to the press box on Saturdays now, and I tell myself that nothing will surprise me anymore, because I just don't know what's going to happen. Like, Clemson might lose by 10 to Pitt, but then they're going to blow out Wake Forest by 20 plus. So I think it could be close. I think it being in Columbia helps the Gamecocks. I think that the second that the ball is kicked and we start playing, of course, like, the rivalry is going to take over. But I do wonder if Dabo and Beamer's kind of mutual appreciation for each other, and this was something that one of our local writers on our beat, Larry Williams, wrote about at Tiger Illustrated this week as well. Just like, does it get a little less nasty between the fans? Like, there's been some times where Coke bottles were thrown and objects are flying, and I do wonder if maybe the coaches, who very much respect each other, say, hey, we're not gonna throw things today.
The coaches can say that all they want. The fans are gonna do what the
That's
fans
true,
are
yeah,
gonna
that
do
is true.
Well, let's move on to the Atlantic Division race. As I mentioned at the top, Wake Forest wins, they win a division. Wake Forest loses, NC State wins, the Wolfpack win the division. If they both lose, Clemson, which is 6-2, sitting in the clubhouse right now and enjoying a fine mixed drink, they get in into the championship game once again. Up until last week, I would have said there's no way that Wake Forest is going to give this up. But now, Wake Forest, 5.5-point favorite at Boston College. This is a noon game on Saturday. The Eagles are a very different team all of a sudden with Phil Dracovic at quarterback. I realize they lost last week at Florida State. They were down 26-3 in that game, nearly came back and won. Florida State held on there. But my goodness, I mean, they have a really big, strong-arm quarterback, Boston College does, that can be problematic for some teams, especially for a defense like Wake Forest. What do you see in this one? I mean, you've seen both these teams this year. I know you didn't see full-strength BC, but right. Do you think the Eagles can give Wake Forest some trouble, especially the way that the Deacons have been playing defense?
I definitely do. Yeah, I mean, we didn't see Dracovic when BC and Clemson played, but yeah, I mean, I think that this is a Wake Forest team that all of a sudden, it's such a weird dynamic, right? Because they've only lost one conference game, because the North Carolina game was obviously non-conference, and yet all of a sudden they feel extremely vulnerable. And whereas Clemson, who's lost multiple games, is kind of like you said, chilling with the mojito and just kind of seeing how the cards fall. So yeah, I absolutely think that Boston College can give Wake Forest a game. It's at Boston College, correct? Am I right on that?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. So they're going to
the rabid Chestnut Hill environment up there. Noon start. I can't imagine it's going to be just a wild place.
What a thriller. Yeah, 2 days after Thanksgiving. Everyone's going to still be in their sweats, probably napping. But yes, to your point, I think this could be a game. And I think Wake Forest can and should and probably will win, but I don't think it's Wake Forest is going to run away with the division like we thought as recently as probably 9 days ago.
Yeah, I felt like the Deacons were out-talented by Clemson in a lot of ways. That showed up, and you go, man, yes. That defensive line is like, oh my gosh, those guys are still overwhelming this Wake Forest offensive line, getting in there, busting up that mesh point. I mean, it was just problematic for them all day. I don't feel like that will be the same case at Boston College. Certainly the Eagles don't have a talent level like Clemson does. If Wake Forest cannot seal the deal this week, how disappointing is that? I mean, this is the year. Everything was set up for the Deacons. They have this very experienced team. And I've asked people before about this, about NC State, because I feel like it's kind of the same thing. They've all been waiting for Clemson to tumble and come back to the pack, and they finally did. And if you don't win it this year, man, what a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I remember back in the summer, because I did our Wake Forest State of the Program, I remember talking to Dave Clawson, and I remember him telling me back in whatever month this was, May, June, maybe July, I don't know, that when Wake and Clemson played each other on November 20th, he wanted there to be something on the line. And I remember thinking, there probably will be, and that Clemson's going to clinch and then cruise into the conference championship on the way to their seventh playoff. You know, that's kind of what I made of that. And so this has been, I say that to say, like, this has been something that Wake Forest has clearly been thinking about for months. Like, he knew this was his most experienced team coming back. He knew this was the year they had that mantra, good to great. They have been in the top 10 for a good chunk of the college football playoff rankings. Like, yeah, this feels like it has been Wake Forest's year. And so I do think that if you can't seal the deal and then someone else gets in via the domino effect, and they got in basically because you lost and not necessarily because they sealed it, I think that's a tough pill to swallow if you're Wake Forest.
Well, Clemson doesn't play until 7:30 on Saturday, so it will know its fate before it gets into that, because on Friday night, UNC plays at NC State. The Wolfpack are 5.5-point favorites. I like how this was set up. It's like, well, NC State plays first. Well, actually, it could have been a better setup than this, I guess. But Wake Forest could actually have a chance to, or NC State could be eliminated before Wake Forest even plays on Saturday. And then they both could be eliminated before Clemson even plays on Saturday night. This NC State-UNC game is always weird. It feels like the team that's not expected to win plays well. And then I went and looked at the results lately, and that has not been the case the last 2 years. UNC has absolutely walloped NC State. They've outscored them 89-31 the last 2 years. But I go back to 2018. UNC is terrible. They're 2-9. Fedora's about to get fired, and they take NC State to overtime. This is a 9-win NC State team. They go 34-28. They win that, but it was a really close game. 2016, I remember that vividly because I was watching that because it impacted the Hokies that year. UNC is still in the Coastal hunt. They're 10-point favorites. NC State had lost 5 of 6 and wins that game 28-21. So I feel like weird things happen in this matchup, and the team that's expected to win doesn't always win. Sam Howell looks like he'll play. He was held out last week against Wofford with an upper body injury. Looking at this one, I mean, that's two pretty good quarterbacks, two pretty potent offenses in this game. This could be a fun game to watch. I'm kind of looking forward to this on Friday night.
Me too. Yeah, it's like the perfect... see, I love the way it's set up because, well, I went to North Carolina, and like, so obviously I'll be watching, but it just, Friday night just feels like the perfect time where like you've had your leftover sandwich, you're ready to go, you're not completely super, like, you've had your nap. It's like the perfect time to start watching football again. You've come up from your Thanksgiving coma, basically. But yeah, I think this game, obviously, like you said, two really talented quarterbacks. Devin Leary played extremely well against Clemson. Weird things happen. NC State has, in many ways, I feel like NC State has a hard time living up to expectations sometimes, and everyone is kind of wondering, when are they going to do it? And then this year, North Carolina is in the exact same boat. Like, I don't think that... Do you remember how silly we all felt after we spent all preseason talking about North Carolina is going to maybe do it this year. That if there's not going to be if Clemson's not going to be the playoff, it could totally be UNC. And then, you know, their season unravels the way that it does. So I'm excited for it. I'm with you. I think this game could be a little nutty.
Yeah. We talk about the law of the wolf and always disappointing when they have huge expectations. Well, UNC this year is like, hold my beer. Because
yes.
We were talking about UNC, like, oh, could they be a sleeper playoff team? And then that was over basically in the first weekend when they lose to Virginia
Literally
Tech.
Literally week one, yes.
They lose to Virginia Tech. Everybody's like, oh, maybe the Hokies are good. It's like, no, they were not. That was just a game between two very mediocre programs in that one. It's funny how that works out all the time. We make such a big deal about a result, and then we go back, and it's like, no, that was not a big deal at all in this one. UNC is a tough team to figure out. I feel like they've been competitive throughout the year. They took Pitt to overtime. And then the range just opened up in that overtime game where it's just like, that was really bad timing of it. And then I look at NC State and, you know, beat Syracuse 41-17 last week. Chance at a 10-win season still. This has been done once in NC State history. In 2002
what?
With Philip Rivers. They've had one 10-win season in their history.
Ever?
Yes, ever. So this is like really a great chance for the Wolfpack to do something special in the history of this program. If they can win this one, win the bowl game as well on top of that. Hey, perhaps sneak into the ACC title game. I mean, it's there. It feels like it's all set up for the Wolfpack, which is exactly the time that you would not expect the Wolfpack to come through in a game like this. So it'll be a fun one to watch. Like you said, you know, Thanksgiving's over. You're probably a little sick of your family at that point. You're like, I got to get away a little bit and watch this. I think a lot of ACC fans, I know I will at least be tuning in for that one. Flip over to the Coastal real quick. Pitt sealed this thing up, beat UVA 48-38 in a score that was just what we all wanted in this game. I mean, so much offense. Brennan Armstrong threw for 487 yards for UVA.
Good gosh.
And Kenny Pickett was like, whatever, I'll throw for 340 and four touchdowns.
Right.
Jordan Addison, by the way, 202 receiving yards, four touchdowns. He's got 15 touchdowns this year. That's the nation's best. Are you a voter on the Biletnikoff Award?
I am. And
they are relentless with their reminders and texts and emails. I'm like, I get it, guys. I will do that. They will hunt you down if you have not voted. Jordan Addison might get my vote on that once we finally have to turn in the final ballot. I'm sure I'll get 18 reminders about that between now and when it's due. But this is just like the Pittsburgh way this year. I mean, in the past, it's been defense. It's going to hold them tight and whatever they can do offensively. This year, it's like, oh, they gave up 38 points. So what? We'll score 48, and we're plenty capable of that. I mean, it's just... I don't know if refreshing is the word to call it watching Pitt, but like this is not your father's Pitt team. Like this is enjoyable. This is a fun team to watch, right?
It is a really fun team to watch. I think it's been Kenny Pickett and the season that he has had to me has been one of the most fun, entertaining parts of the ACC this year. I mean, they beat Clemson. What is it? What did he say on the broadcast after they beat Clemson? He basically tells ESPN he's going to go have a cold one. And you're like, oh, yeah, you can do that because you're like 28, you know? I just feel like Pitt in I don't know. Tell me if this is too far. Like, I feel like Pitt kind of became the ACC's fun team this year. Fair?
Well, there are a lot of fun teams in the ACC, but yeah, I think Pitt with
a successful fun team.
Well, yeah, I think you look at Pitt with Kenny Pickett and all the jokes about how old he is and stuff like that. I think it's just like good for him. He wasn't like this superstar the entire time he was there. Everybody kept saying, "Oh, he's an NFL quarterback," and I kept hearing, "I'm like, what? What are you talking about?" But then they go out there and they're like really good, and he's incredible this year. I mean, we do that Heisman tally thing every week at the Athletic, and I'll be honest, he's still on my top three. I still put him in there every week. Now that might be fading as CJ Stroud and the Alabama quarterback start taking off here, but you know, I look at the talent around him and I don't see Ohio State or Alabama level talent around him, and he's still putting up these numbers. Now I say that, and I just mentioned Jordan Addison. I might vote for him for the Biletnikoff Awards. I'm not gonna like act like they're the sisters of the poor here. They have a very talented team there, but for him to do that at Pitt, where they don't do that a lot, I think it's interesting. And then I see this team. I think whoever comes out of the Atlantic on that side, they're gonna be a handful for that team. They might be I'm trying to 100%. Think of a line in that game. They might be favored in any of those games that they play.
Yeah. I mean, they beat Clemson by 10. I would be curious to, and math is not my strong suit, but I would be curious to know like their average margin of victory.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't think it's huge because, I mean, they've blown out, obviously, Duke. And they've blown out some other teams, but Virginia Tech was one of them. But they've played some close games, too.
Yeah.
So I think they could be a favorite. I think I'm looking at all three of those teams they could play. I think they'd be favored over Clemson because they've beaten them. Mm-hmm. Although maybe that changes now that people see that Clemson played a little bit better. I think NC State or Wake Forest, I probably would take Pitt in either of the scenarios, too. Mm-hmm. So
I think I would, too.
Perhaps we need to start preparing ourselves for the idea of Pat Narduzzi raising the ACC championship trophy next week or a week and a half from now. That could be something that happens. Pitt finishes up here, 12.5-point favorite at Syracuse. Nothing much to say about this game. If the division was on the line, I think maybe it could have been a trap or something like that, but I don't feel like they're going to lose this game. I have to say, I feel like I'm a little disappointed with this Syracuse team down the stretch. Like, they were really competitive early in some losses, and then they beat Virginia Tech and Boston College. But the last couple of weeks, lost 41-3 at Louisville, lost 41-17 at NC State. Now all of a sudden they have to win this game to become bowl eligible. That's rough there. This could be the fifth time in 6 years that Dino Babers is under 500. And I feel like people are asking him about his job security. And I read a quote from him before the game. It's like, "I remember we weren't supposed to win more than three games this year." I'm like, well, if that's your benchmark of what you're trying to get over, that's not too great. Do you feel like Babers can continue going on here? I mean, if I'm Syracuse, I don't know if I necessarily want to enter this job market because there's some sharks out there in this one. Yeah. Even Virginia Tech, I don't envy their position having to hire while Florida is out there and LSU. You know, USC doesn't really affect them much because they're not in the same market for coaches. But, man, you throw Syracuse in there, and perhaps if Miami comes open, I don't know what Manny Diaz's situation is down there. If you're Syracuse, do you even want to enter this job market right now, or do you think you just ride it out with Dino?
I don't know that I want to right now on November 23rd, knowing that signing day is less than a month away. And like you said, there are so many openings with some big jobs out there. But I guess, I don't know. I guess it just depends on, what fascinates me about Syracuse is what is the ceiling and what is the expectation. Like the fact that you just mentioned that he said we weren't expected to win more than three games. like, you hear that and you're like, wait, what? Like, I mean, can you imagine us telling our editors, well, like, look, I mean, we weren't really expected to be great spellers or do the whole grammar thing, and we did. So
that's
like,
what I tell my editors every single week. It does not work. I can tell you that.
So I don't know. I mean, I certainly think that if you're a Syracuse fan, you're probably frustrated. What's been interesting to me is just the season that Sean Tucker has had. I think that's gone kind of under the radar, just given, like you said, their struggles down the stretch, but he's had an incredible year. But yeah, I don't know. If I'm the Syracuse AD, I'd probably look around and see how competitive this market is, and I'd probably chill for another year.
Yeah, and you know, I'm with you on Sean Tucker. I mean, he's a runaway first-team All-ACC guy. Well, let's whip around the league here real quick. We touch on these other games we haven't talked about yet. We'll just go in the order that they're being played. So that's how we're doing this. Georgia is a 35.5-point favorite at Georgia Tech. Goodness, Yellow Jackets. This is a rough way to finish the season. Georgia Tech embarrassed itself last week at Notre Dame, lost 55-0. I got to say, it doesn't feel like Jeff Collins is it. It just is not. Like, I have no idea if Georgia Tech has the stomach or the money to fire him this year. And I'm not like a, like, you got to fire everybody. Like, I look at some of these firings, like Dan Mullen. It's like, he's had one bad year, and you're firing him? Like, this is just sort of what happens in college football these days. But, you know, this was such a significant rebuild there. But I just don't see the progress with that team. They're going to, you know, if they lose to Georgia, and I think they will, because everybody loses to Georgia.
It feels like a safe assumption.
They're going to finish this season on a six-game losing streak, Georgia Tech is. Their wins this year will be against Duke, Kennesaw State, and somehow UNC, which they just, you know, bull rush them in that game. Like, you look at Georgia Tech, do you see any progress there with this team? Any reason to keep Jeff Collins around?
I don't see a ton of progress. I also don't know that I see a ton of regression. I just kind of, I don't, like, it's weird because Clemson plays Georgia Tech every year, but right now, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to Georgia Tech, but they just feel like such an afterthought in the conference right now that I just don't really think a lot of them at all, really, honestly. Like, I see them that 1 week a year, and then they go back to Atlanta, and I'm like, okay, see ya, you know? I don't know. It's just not a team that I know or study or see a lot, and Clemson, you know, didn't love it when they were lifting weights on their field or whatever and then crushed them and put up 70 on them a couple years ago. I do remember that, but other than that.
Well, it's weird because this is sort of what Georgia Tech fans asked for, was a departure from the, you know, slow and steady Paul Johnson option offense. They're like, well, we have a higher ceiling than that, and then they bring this guy that's all flash and sizzle, and you mentioned the weights on the sideline. I think a lot of coaches get bothered by that. And all of a sudden, you're winning three games every single year. You're not really competitive in any of that. At least when you had the option offense, you could set your clock to being a 6-win, 7-win, 8-win team pretty much every year. And occasionally, you get up to 10 wins and go to the Orange Bowl or something like that. And you're just a pain in the ass for every single team in the conference. They're not that right now. They're just not competitive. And I wonder, at a school, and you look across the state, and that program in Georgia is the best it's ever been, or close to the best it's ever been. I feel like that's got to be really hard for Georgia Tech fans to stomach and just continue sort of in this mediocrity here. Speaking of mediocrity, Florida State at Florida. How about that transition?
Segue.
Florida is a 2-point favorite in this game. I could not believe that. Considering they just fired their coach, it tells me people are still not buying the Noles here. Even though they won, they beat BC 26-23, gets them to 5 wins. You know, Florida State started out 0-4 this year and can still make a bowl game by winning this. I think that's an incredible accomplishment for Mike Norvell to do that and turn this team around, because we were burying him at the beginning of the year. He was done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, of all Florida coaches, he had the worst job security, and somehow he might be the only one that survives here. You saw Florida State a couple weeks ago. Have you been impressed with I feel like we're talking about Florida State like they're like a terrible program or something like that, but they have been recently. Have you been impressed with how they've been able to turn this around and be competitive again?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you struggle early too in the way that they did, like you said, we were all just crushing him. I mean, that's kind of I am always extremely impressed when teams seem to figure it out in season. And that's what I've been like. Clemson was a similar way for me, where I saw all the issues that Clemson had, and the same would have gone for Florida State. And I thought, this is not getting fixed in 2021. Like, you got to have an off season. You got to go recruit, you know, do your thing in spring ball, develop some more. Like, just, this is a wash, figure it out next year. But the fact that, as you said, they're playing for bowl eligibility right now in a game that the line is 2 points, they have a fired coach on the other side. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know that I should go so far as to say I like the Noles' chances, but I don't dislike them, you know, and I don't see why they can't finish their season out like this. But yeah, I think the turnaround's been remarkable.
I mean, how great would that be if they could beat an interim coach at one of your rivals in the last game to get over the hump and get to bowl eligibility and deny them bowl eligibility?
Yeah.
That's the other part, is that Florida is 5-6, needs to win to get to the postseason as well. Yeah, Jordan Travis played well last week, 251 passing yards, 3 touchdowns. Florida State just sort of beat the living heck out of Dracovic, just hit him early and often, and I think that affected him later in that game as well. So it should be interesting. Certainly two schools that don't like each other down there. Miami is a 21.5-point favorite at Duke. I don't know if Manny Diaz is safe, but I do know that Miami is going to win this one and win this one handily, because Duke is terrible.
Yes.
You know, we'll get to it in a second. Malik Cunningham just completely torched that defense last week. Could this be it for Cutcliffe? I mean, I feel like we've been talking about this every week, and it just is not getting its better. I don't know what Duke hangs its hat on at this point. You could always kind of count on they'd have this special quarterback that, you know, look at Daniel Jones getting drafted and some other guys that had really good seasons there. And I just don't see that in this offense. And this defense is the worst in the ACC. 516 yards is giving up per game. That's 129th nationally. There's one team
516.
Worse. Yeah, one team worse. I just...
What's the one team that's worse?
I forgot to write it down. I could look it up here, but...
I'll look it up. Keep talking. I'll look it up.
Like, it just does not feel like things are getting better for Duke. And I, you know, credit to Cutcliffe for getting Duke to what it did before, but it just feels like it's time to just move on. Let somebody else take it. And, I think he's smart enough about his situation, wise enough about it to be like, okay, I think maybe this has run the course here and step aside without hurting his legacy too much there. Do you think Duke moves on? Do you think Cutcliffe just realizes, hey, this is probably run its course?
Yeah, I don't know where his... Oh, by the way, it's Arkansas State.
Arkansas State. That would not have been my pick.
They are giving up 521 yards a game. Woof. Yeah, I mean, I haven't spent a lot of time around Duke. I don't know Cutcliffe. I don't really know his mindset, all that kind of stuff. But I do think that you just look at Duke from an outsider's perspective, and they're, like you said, they're just not moving forward. And I think that's where things get really tough, is when you're not making progress and there doesn't seem to be a path to making progress. Like, it's not like Duke is, I'm going to look this up right now too, actually, because I'm curious. It's not, I would imagine Duke is probably not killing it in the recruiting trail right now.
No, you know, and they never have. That's never been their thing, but they've always found players before. And
yes.
It doesn't feel like they have those right now. They're really hurting on defense.
Yeah. I mean, and Cutcliffe is what, 67?
I think he's 67, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure it's something. Speaking as not a 67-year-old, I would imagine at 67, I'm probably going to think about retiring from whatever job I'm in. So, I'm sure it's something that has to be on his mind, right? Like, people like you and I are curious.
Yeah, I think that this would be it, but I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of Duke and how much they expect of the football program. It's obviously always sort of an afterthought there. Maybe they just go, this guy's been a great representative of the program.
Sure.
He can leave when he wants to. I don't know if he gets to that, but I feel like there's some pressure there for him to do that. Miami, there's always pressure there to win. I feel like Manny Diaz could save himself here. I feel a lot better about his situation if he had not blown that lead against Florida State a couple weeks ago. If they had won that, they could have finished the season with 6 straight wins. Instead, it will be 5 of 6, because I'm positive that they're going to beat Duke in this one. Tyler Van Dyke feels like the real deal. I saw him in person last week throwing the ball in the rain, throwing the ball down the field. very impressive. I think he's a keeper on that team. They have a lot of talent in those younger classes down there. You know, all the former Miami players are up in arms about Manny Diaz and the athletic department, and things have to change with this program. And I don't know. I feel like they're on the verge here of doing something. Would you keep Manny Diaz after this year? It's only been 3 years. I feel like you got to give a coach a little bit more time than that.
Yeah, I've always felt like, and I don't know that this will ever exist in college football as we know it again, but I've always felt like you have to give a coach five just to fairly evaluate them, and they get their own players in and they're recruiting and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, I mean, you look at a situation like Willie Taggart, like that wasn't even close to five. But yeah, I think I would retain Diaz if I was Miami. Well, I don't know. What would you do?
I think I would. And again, yeah. I look at the market right now.
Right. It's just, it's,
and, you know,
it's
unless,
so saturated.
Unless they think they could pull Cristobal and get him back. And,
right.
And honestly, that looks a little bit worse after he goes and gets blown out by Utah last week.
Good
with
a
playoff caliber team that he had there set up at Oregon.
Right.
And I don't know if Miami can do that. I don't know if they have the money to do that. I mean, we talk about Miami. It's not like the deepest pocketed school that's out there. I just don't know. I mean, they're always chasing something of their past. And I feel like that program's former players sometimes do more harm than good with how much they sort of complain about the program and interfere with that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I think I would give Manny Diaz another year, but that's a program that expects a lot and expects results. Two more games here real quick. Virginia Tech at Virginia. This is one I'll be covering. UVA is a 7-point favorite in this game. That is the most the Cavaliers have been favored in the series since 1991.
Wow.
When they were a 9-point favorite.
Wow.
I just don't see Virginia Tech keeping up with UVA's offense in this one. I mean, you know, Brendan Armstrong is back. You know, Tyler Van Dyke threw for 357 last week against these Hokies. It makes me go, well, what is Brendan Armstrong going to do? He throws for 500 yards every week. Virginia Tech had an interim coach last week, and J.C. Price. I just don't feel like they have the horses this year or the offense to keep up with UVA. Any thoughts on this one from afar? I know these are two teams that you don't see regularly, but thoughts from the other side of the conference here in the Atlantic Division on this one?
I mean, I think the season that Brendan Armstrong has had has probably gone under the radar more than it should. I mean, this dude's thrown for, what, more than 400 yards a game?
I think he's up there. I don't know if it's more than 400 average, but it's way up there among the national leaders. It's been very impressive.
Yeah, so I think I don't know. I think we probably should be giving him more credit than we are. Maybe he's getting it. I don't know. Over here on the Atlantic side, when I think about the big coastal quarterbacks, you immediately think Pickett and Howell, you know. But yeah, I mean, you're the expert on this game, but I would be inclined to pick Virginia.
I would too. I look at Virginia Tech's quarterbacks and I go, how are they going to score with UVA? I just don't see it happening, and that'd be a disappointing end to the season for Virginia Tech, which needs to win this game to get bowl eligible. UVA's not coming in playing red hot. You know, they've lost three straight coming into this game, but I just think this is queued up for the Cavaliers to win this one and end what's been an extremely disappointing season for Virginia Tech. Last game here. Thank you for being on the podcast so long. We can get to this last game here. Kentucky at Louisville. Louisville is a 3.5-point favorite in this game. I think it might have been down to 2.5 last time I checked. Malik Cunningham. We don't talk about this guy enough in
we
all
don't.
The quarterbacks in this league. Got to see him in that Duke game. He threw for 303 yards and 5 touchdowns. You go, oh, that's incredible. That's a great game right there. But he also ran for 224 and 2
Ridiculous.
Touchdowns. Second person in FBS history with a 300-200 game. The first was Washington's Marcus Tuiasosopo, which is just nice to get that name back out there in the public consciousness. I watched some of this game, and it was like, it's like watching a high school game where one side was pretty bad and the other side just had this star player, the star quarterback that was just faster and quicker than anybody else on the other team. It's like playing on rookie mode in Madden or something like that. He was just weaving through the other team and doing stuff like you shouldn't be able to do that. you know, I look at Cunningham, and you look at his passing stats, 18 passing touchdowns this year, 5 picks, and you go, all right, pretty good season there. But then you add on 933 rushing and 18 more touchdowns. Could this guy be an all-ACC pick this year? I mean, such a crowded field for quarterbacks at the top. I feel like he could be up there, though.
I think he could definitely be up there. I mean, I remember when Clemson played them the week leading into it, Dabo had said he's kind of Lamar-esque. And I remember being like, wow, I don't know that I would go that far. And then I saw Malik Cunningham play in that game, and I was like, if I was on Louisville's football team, I would legitimately run through a wall for this guy. Like, he just is so electric. He's played hurt at times this season. 100%. I think he's a quarterback that we also do not talk enough about. I really like watching him play. He's just a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, he could make Louisville, this could be a bounce-back season. They were 4-7 last year, could get them to 7-5. Rivalry game with Kentucky, I know they always want to win that one. Games at Louisville. I think I like Louisville in this one. If you were picking in this one, who would you take?
What does Vegas say?
I think it was Louisville by around a field goal, something like that, at home.
All right. Yeah, I would take Louisville at home.
There you
go.
Show some ACC pride. I like it, Grace.
Hashtag go ACC.
Well, we've hit everything. Grace, thank you so much for coming on. Please, Wake Forest or NC State, take care of business this week. Grace needs the first week of December off for once. She doesn't need to have to go to the ACC championship game and cover another one of these. Wouldn't it be great to have the first week of December off and not have to cover that?
All right, so let me tell you this. I have been waiting. This is going to sound very random, but Nelly is coming to Greenville the night before the ACC championship. And I'm like, do I go to this Nelly concert or am I going to be going to Charlotte? And so I've just been sitting here in limbo, like, what should I do? So I'm hoping we get some answers fast so I can figure out whether or not I'm going to go see Nelly.
Well, Friday night, you could go to that and then cover the game the next day, right? You don't even
need... This is true. I could do that. Something tells me that, like, hobbling into the... I want to be in my best mindset, though, for a potential ACC championship, not, you know, possibly hungover from a concert.
Well,
seeing Nelly.
I'm hoping for your sake that Wake Forest or NC State takes care of business so you can go to this Nelly concert, not have to worry about that. Grace, thanks so much for coming on. Everybody go follow her, GM Rainer, on Twitter. Good Twitter follow there for all your Clemson needs. Grace, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, that's another show in the books. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Thanks for joining us and listening to this. Please go rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe to The Athletic. You can listen to this podcast ad-free. We have a great deal going on right now. It's $1 per month for a whole year for new subscribers. Go to theathletic.com/ACCpod to get the best deal there. Follow me on Andy Bitter on Twitter. I'm at AndyBitterVT. I'll be at the UVA Virginia Tech game this week and then diving into a coaching search, which will not be too much fun. We'll be back next week to talk about the ACC championship game and everybody that is into that. We will talk to you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.